Hey, man. Good morning, North Boulevard, wherever you are, whichever campus you are attending today. We're glad you're here. West Smyrna, Laverne, 316. Early, late, Facebook, Latino, Chinese. Wasn't last Sunday an awesome Sunday? It looks like John Magnuson was kind of the overseer of the whole event, and he said repeatedly the whole week this week, he's been saying, you know, we were just 5 degrees from the worst decision we've ever made. If it had just been 5 degrees cooler, you would have all said, what were they thinking? But it turned out awesome. I think the final count was 2,162 people, which is quite a crowd. And I just want to say, those who worked on it, you need to know, like, we had staff members, literally Mike Jones and his team, they were at the soccer field until 4:30 a.m. setting everything up. And when you walked in, it just everything just looked like it was, you know, had grown there naturally. But a whole lot of people put a lot of time into that, and I'm just really proud of the team. It was an awesome Sunday. So everybody keeps saying, "Okay, we're going to do it again," and the answer is the Pope Catholic? Actually, I remember when that used to be an answer and not actually a question. Anyway, little humor there. Hey, you know, the discipled life is supposed to be lived out everywhere. We're supposed to be disciples of Jesus in our marriages. We're supposed to be disciples of Jesus in our neighborhood. But we're also supposed to be disciples of Jesus in our work and in our career. And actually, oftentimes, that's where the rubber really hits the road. Because work and career pose for us a lot of challenges. And so our next School of Christian Thought event is really designed to help you think Christianly about work and career. We've worked really, really hard to get Donnie Smith to come to North Boulevard. He was the CEO of Tyson Foods. You know, we know Tyson around here because they have plants around here. But you may not know Tyson Foods at one point was one of the largest employers in the entire nation, more than 110,000 employees. And Donnie is a faithful Christian. He's been very service-minded. How do you lead as Jesus leads? How do you work as Jesus works? How do you pursue a career as Jesus would have you to do? And we have got Donnie coming to North Boulevard. I'm like, this is kind of a big deal. Let's just put it this way. It's such a big deal that he doesn't need to be paid. So there you go. That's kind of nice. He's coming for lunch on December the 2nd. It's a free lunch. Take your lunch break on December the 2nd, come to North Boulevard, and listen to him talk about how do we lead as Jesus would lead, how do we work as Jesus would work, and how do we pursue a career as Jesus would do. So it'll be a lunch here at North Boulevard. The only thing we need is that you have to register so we know how much food to get. That's our next School of Christian Thought event, teaching us to think Christianly about work and career. Now, let's jump right into our lesson. And I'm going to start with this quotation. Actually, it might be hard to get through this. Here's a quote I read in the newspaper this week, the Daily News Journal. Seeing Jesus, seeing the light, feeling the love, having that peace, I'm super excited to go home to heaven. There'll be dancing, lots of dancing. I love to dance. And I'll be double dancing in heaven. That was one of our sweet sisters and dear members, Carrie Jolly. She found out she had cancer in 2015. In the first round she beat, but then it came back and it's hit her body now with a vengeance. She now has bone cancer, or the cancer's in her bones. It doesn't look good. And so one of her dear friends, Tammy Sandlin, who's also had cancer, went to her and said, look, what one thing could you offer your children as you're now in this very difficult place? And Carrie said, well, I'd love to take them to Disney World, but there's no way I can travel. So Tammy got together with the world's best youth ministry team and the world's best children's ministry team, and they decided to bring Disney World to the Jolly family. So Tuesday afternoon, they sent a stretch limo to pick up the two kids from school, 1-10 and 1-13, and they took them first to get gourmet cookies. Now, mind you, many of our children and our teens had dressed up like characters from Disney and from video games and whatnot, and there was a whole group of North Boulevard people there to welcome them. From there, they went over to a laser tag place here in Murfreesboro where they had played games. They went and did go-karting, and then they came back to North Boulevard. And when they came back to North Boulevard, that evening they had pizza, they had celebration, there was laughter, there were tears. And Carrie said, I'm looking forward to what God is going to do next. And she's left a legacy for her children. when I first read the story in the Daily News Journal, my thought was this: that's my church. These are my people. Look, the church needs to be the most loving place on planet Earth. That's what God bequeathed to us. So even when you hear me talk incessantly about disciple making, remind yourself that's the mission, but it's not the motive. The motive is the Great Command. The Great Commission's the mission. The Great Command's the motive. And the Great Command is simply this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And so I want to belong to, and I think you do too, a church that's dead serious about that kind of love. The article was carried in the Daily News Journal, and it's pretty cool when you read about love and realize this is my family they're talking about. We've been talking about one another, and one reason why is because when you push hard on mission, and y'all know I've pushed you pretty hard on mission, I keep talking about disciple making. It's the last words of Jesus: go make disciples. But sometimes if you push really hard on mission, you might forget the motive. In fact, you could become a bully at disciple making if you're not careful. The only motive we have for anything is the love of God and the love of others. That's the only motive we have. And so what we want to do is to make sure that North Boulevard becomes the most loving place in Rutherford County, the most loving place in Tennessee, the most loving place on earth. When people walk into your campus, wherever it is, they need to know they love me here. By the way, that's one reason why we did this hashtag one another NB. It's really sort of designed to say, just look at the love. So Paul puts it this way. In Colossians, the third chapter, he speaks of love as undergirding everything that we do. So I'm going to read the last verse, verse 14 first. Over all these virtues, he says, put on love. Love will bind everything you do together in perfect unity. So love is the motive. We want to be a loving community where people love one another and where there's an abundance of grace. So I want to talk, I just want to pause for a second because I've asked you, if you want to, even during the sermon, like if you want to get your phone out and feel good about doing that, because I know you already got it out, but you don't feel so good. Now you can get it out and feel good about it. If you'll go to hashtag one another NB, you'll get to see all these sort of one another things. Fire that up there, guys. I don't know where I am. Oh, it's on the side already. Okay. It's really cool just to see how many people are actively involved in just saying, hey, this is going to be a loving community. And the Lord knows, never in our lifetime have we needed to emphasize the right kind, Christ-like love as much as we do now. Americans are so individualistic. We've really become America's become a rather self-serving place. And so it's actually swimming upstream now for us to practice the kind of love that God wants us to practice. Let's bring it down. I want to move to the next thing. So I'm trying to inspire you to think about love. I want to give you one last image. So I've had the opportunity to go a number of times to the Western Wall. It is all that remains of the old temple wall in Jesus's day. And you know this, it's called the Wailing Wall often. Jews have come for centuries from all over the world to visit the Western Wall, to pray to God, and then to insert a little prayer inside of that wall. There are two sides of the wall. One side is for men, one side is for women. They do that because both sides don't want to be, they don't want their minds clouded by attraction, if you get what I'm saying. And so I've never actually seen the women's side. Men aren't allowed over in the women's side. But this last time we went, we got a photograph of some women praying at the women's wall because several of the women had gone up there. And as I got back, I was looking at the photographs. I didn't take it, but I was looking at some of the photographs. We just got back a couple of weeks ago. And I've decided that I found the best photograph I've ever seen of Israel. So what do you think it would be? The best photograph I've ever seen of Israel. You might think Church of Holy Sepulchre or, you know, the Sea of Galilee, or you might be thinking something like Masada, the great fortress, or, you know, the people floating on the Dead Sea. This is the best photograph I've ever seen from Israel. It is two of our women who have discipled one another and loved one another. It doesn't matter who they are. And they went up to the wall, and one of them said to me afterwards, the one with her arm around the other, they gave me permission to share their name, but I'm not going to. She said, it's so hard to describe what it felt like to be standing next to this person and to see her crying as she prayed for me. Like the greatest need you have in life is a need to love somebody and to be loved by somebody. And one of the greatest challenges to building a loving community is the challenge of unforgiveness. So I want to talk about forgiveness. I don't think it's a very long sermon, we'll see. But when we talk about unforgiveness, I don't want you to feel spanked because of this sermon. I'm not going to spank you. You're welcome. The prophet that sometimes comes out of me, the revivalist preacher, I'm going to tuck him down today. I'm going to try to hold him back. Let me just talk to you as a friend for a second, and let me just say this. If we're not a loving community, every one of us loses. And if you carry unforgiveness in your heart, the whole world loses. You carry unforgiveness and you lose. It is a ball and a chain. And so I want to encourage, as your friend, sort of as a pastor, a pastoral role — we don't use the word pastor, I don't mean in an elder sense, but the pastor is just a shepherd, and I do shepherd you to some extent. And I want to encourage you in that sense. Ask yourself the question, what's standing between me and a fully free life where I've forgiven everyone and released all the debts, and now I walk in the confidence of the love of God? What's between you and that? And so let's just start out real quickly with a brief definition of our word forgiveness. We'll look at Colossians 3 now, verse 13, where Paul says — you see, I'm still missing my television — "Bear with one another, forgive one another. If any one of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you." So look, three quick points there. The first one is, there's a difference between forbearance and forgiveness. We're encouraged to do both. Forbearance occurs when there's something about someone you don't really care for, but you just decide it's okay because you got stuff we don't care about either. Just make sure you know that. Like, if you didn't like the old songs we sang this morning, I promise you, someone sitting next to you doesn't like the new songs. So forbearance sometimes just means, hey, I just put up with some things. If you like a suit and a tie on Sunday and the guy next to you dresses more like this, then just be mindful that both sides would prefer the other side change. Forbearance just means deciding, you know what, we're in this together. We're married. And because we're married, we're in this together, we're one big family, some things you just put up with, it's not a big deal. But the word forgiveness stands out. Now, the word forgiveness means something like this. I'm going to give you seven really quick statements about forgiveness, because there's an entire cluster of terms in the Bible that get translated forgiveness. You don't see this in English, but in the Hebrew and the Greek Bibles — that's Hebrew Old Testament, Greek New Testament — there are whole clusters of words, and I don't want to go into all of that because I want to get to forgiveness. But sometimes they mean tolerating other people. Sometimes forgiveness means showing mercy. So I see somebody's taking a picture this morning. Feel free to take a picture. This is not unique to me, but it might be helpful to you. Sometimes forgiveness means lifting the burden of guilt. So forgiveness might mean this. This is what we do in marriage sometimes. Julie will say to me, or I'll say to her, I'm sorry for what I did, and we'll name it. And then the other one will say, I release you. I forgive you. Which means I do not hold that against you anymore. Debt is canceled. There's no debt, and I won't bring it back up. It's over. You've paid the debt. Forgiveness sometimes means declaring someone not guilty. By the way, it doesn't mean that they're not guilty. It means you grant them the status of not guilty. So y'all remember when Ruth was here from India, she told the story of a guy in her village that the first time she understood Christianity, a guy had literally murdered somebody. He had blood all over his shirt. He came home. This, by the way, is the greatest story of the cross I've ever heard. He comes home and his older brother sees him with blood all over his shirt and says, "What in the world have you done?" And he says, "I got in a fight. I stabbed a guy. I think he's dead." And the older brother said, "Take your shirt off." And the older brother took his shirt off, handed it to the younger brother, and the older brother put the shirt on himself and said, "I'm going to prison for you." Okay, that doesn't mean the younger brother was not guilty, but what it does mean is he's been released of his guilt, declared not guilty. Sometimes forgiveness in the Bible means you cover over a wrong, or you just decide, "I'm not going to punish. I'm not going to punish." This is really important in marriage. I want to say this: if your marriage is driven by punishment, then one day we're going to call you divorced. Like, you don't like what your spouse did, so you punish them. One day we're going to call you divorced. Because punishment and love really have to be — there's a real delicate balance. But when we live with one another, forgiveness means sometimes I refuse to punish you. I'm not talking about children. I'm talking about in equal relationships, husbands and wives. Sometimes it means reconciling. By the way, this is a really difficult thing. It takes two to reconcile. It only takes one to forgive, but it takes two to reconcile. And that's worth knowing. Like, you can forgive regardless of what the other person does, but you can't reconcile unless they're willing to. That releases you of the burden of thinking, I have to reconcile? No, you don't have to. You don't have to reconcile. But it is sort of the noblest, highest form of forgiveness, and it's often available to us if we'll choose it. And then sometimes forgiveness means paying the price that someone else owes. And that, again, is a very high form of forgiveness. That's when you say, look, I've been wronged. I have every right to see you punished. This is Botham Jean's brother. You remember I showed the video clip? His brother had been accidentally shot by a police officer who went into the wrong apartment. She's convicted of, I think, maybe third degree. I don't remember what she was convicted of. 10-year sentence, I think. And Botham Jean's youngest brother is sitting there on the sort of witness impact stand giving his statement. And what does he say? He says, I don't wish anything bad on you. In fact, I want you to have a wonderful life. And in an amazing testimony, he says, and both of them would have wanted that too. And the best way to have a wonderful life is for you to accept Jesus Christ as your Savior. And then he looks at the judge. If this is not one of the most startling scenes in all of the history of the American court system, I don't know what would be. He looks at the judge and says, can I give her a hug? I'll ask you a question. You think that young man has peace in his heart? Bet he does. I bet he does. Now, the courts had to do what the courts did, right? The courts have to exercise justice. Justice matters. We're going to talk about it in a second. But Botham's young brother, he decided more important to him than justice was simply setting her free. Let her go. Now, that's what forgiveness means, and I want to talk about forgiveness, and I want to say I really do think that there are three things that make it difficult to forgive. Will you just think for a moment about, do you have somebody that you know you need to forgive? Before we get into this, I try to be really confessional with you guys. I decided a long time ago it's just a lot better for you if I confess, you know, at least in sometimes general senses, my sins. And that way we can all be even and you don't think too much of me, which you shouldn't. But I think God has given me forgiveness. I don't think there's anybody I haven't forgiven. And so at least when I'm anxious for the future, but I don't feel anxious about the past. It's really nice. I don't feel like I just feel like I've tried to forgive everybody. Have you? Here are the three things that I think make it difficult for us to forgive. First is, we're in the image of God, and God is a just God. That means imprinted upon your heart is the need for justice. So I want you to know, there's nothing wrong with you not wanting to forgive. There's nothing wrong with that. We require justice. The many times in human history where injustice was punished by God. That's one reason why God says, don't take vengeance. Vengeance is mine. I mean, God is a just God, and God actually is going to solve all the injustices of this world. He's going to solve, one way or the other, a just judge is going to get his hands on these things. That's also why Romans chapter 13 teaches us that God ordained governments. Governments have the obligation to exercise justice. Not just the right, but the obligation. So we expect our government, and we have a right to expect our government to practice justice. But I'm not the government. I'm a follower of Jesus. I live under a government, but I follow Jesus. And that means that I can at times just say, I'm going to let God handle this. Look, if you trust that God is a just God, he's going to take care of it. If you'll trust that he's a just God, he will take care of it. You can't make it right sometimes, but God will. He promises over and over again, the Bible teaches us, he's a just God. Here's the second reason I think it's difficult for us to forgive. Some wrongs leave a lasting pain that you just can't forget. So we could talk about structural injustices. Every culture has had them, so has the U.S. Injustices, especially against African Americans, that still leave many of you African Americans disadvantaged. There are structural wrongs, and the pain just continues. There's also personal wrongs where the pain continues. Someone has done something to you. Sometimes we bear bodily scars of what's been done to us. How about this? You've been passed over for a promotion 4 or 5 times because you're not kin to the right person. So every time you see those who got those promotions living the dream, spending money, and you realize, you know, I should have had that. Every time you see them spend money, you realize there's a hurt that won't go away. This is legitimate. I mean, we all carry them. For many of you, you were mistreated or abandoned by your parents, one or the other, maybe both, and it has left you with searing pain that doesn't ever seem to go away. And that can make it difficult to forgive. I just want to acknowledge the pain is real. We're not saying you shouldn't have any pain. But what we will say is that Jesus can heal you of that pain. He really can. He can heal you of that pain. I'm going to tell you how in just a second. And then there's this one. And this one is a little bit less, I have a little less sympathy for. Honestly, for some of us, we don't forgive because we're too proud. And I'm going to say something about pride that you don't have to agree with, but you should. If you want to be wrong, it's okay with me. Most of the time that I experience pride in somebody, it is a cover for low self-esteem. Pride is almost always a cover for low self-esteem. Pride is what people do when they don't have a good view of themselves. And so for some of you, you're having a hard time forgiving because your pride has been crossed. And it confirmed what you already thought about yourself, which is, I'm not worth much. And you can't stand the feeling, so you won't forgive. In fact, to be honest, for some of you, the unwillingness to forgive makes you feel better about yourself. Because now you can say, it's not my fault, it's his fault. But like it's a little pet that you can groom and love on and hold in your lap. It sort of excuses whatever else happens in your life, that sometimes pride just gets in the way. And this one especially requires that we get on our knees and we say, Lord, give me what I need in order to forgive as you forgave. And that's the third thing I want you to see in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 14. Because what Paul says is forbear one another, forgive one another. But then he says, do it as Christ forgave you. So I'm going to ask you a question. Were you forgiven by Jesus? You remember what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount? No, it's Mark chapter 4. It's the parable of the soils. Whatever you give will be given to you. And whatever measure you use will be measured out to you. If you have a cup full of forgiveness, you're going to get a cup full of forgiveness. If you have a bushel full of forgiveness, you'll have a bushel full of forgiveness. If you have a life full of forgiveness, you will receive a life full of forgiveness. So we forgive as Christ forgives. Now, can it be done? One of the leaders of our Celebrate Recovery ministry had issues growing up with her father. It's not important what they are. And by the way, we're not indicting him. Sometimes it's just personality differences, but we internalize those. Jill Spry, by the way, Jill's daughter is at Nima House, Tanzania, where she works as a PA, I think. Is she a PA there? Is that right? Nurse practitioner. Jill sat down and just gave us a couple of, 90 seconds, a statement about what happened to her when she finally learned to forgive, to let go. So I want you to hear what she has to say.
I think it all started with Celebrate Recovery. I came to Celebrate Recovery about 6 years ago, and I was full of anger and resentment and bitterness. But it helped me to realize, you know, it helped me to change my view of my dad. I was holding resentment towards him for a long time. And going through a step study, it helped me change that view of him. I could see him as the child who had lost his mom at 9 months old. I could see him as the child whose dad just was waiting for him to be old enough to quit school, to come home and help him on the farm. And so I learned to be able to forgive him for not being the dad I wanted him to be. And that gave me so much freedom to finally be able to do that. And so as he aged, as his health declined, I was able to help my sisters take care of him with love and peace and joy because I had extended that forgiveness and let go of resentment and bitterness. You know, the verse that really, I guess, got to me most is that if we don't forgive others, God doesn't forgive us. And I'm like, I can't let this bitterness stand in my way of receiving God's forgiveness. And there was no way. I mean, I had to figure out how to get through it because I didn't want to miss out.
So we don't just forgive because it helps us. We forgive because it's the right thing to do. I want to remind you that truth matters even if you don't feel it. But I will say this, learning to forgive someone, including an ex, including a mother or a father, including someone who really treated you wrong at work, someone who betrayed you, when you do that, you lose a ball and a chain that's making you miserable. That's not the only reason you do it. We forgive because Christ forgave us. But you need to know the ball and chain that you're carrying around, you don't have to. You really don't have to. So let me give you just a few things that I think you ought to do in order to forgive, especially when it's hard. Let's start here. So North Boulevard is a small group church. And I just want to say this again. At the back of every one of our services, Smyrna Laverne, West, you guys at East, is our connections table. We will help you get in a small group. Remember, you saw last week, 2,162 people. It's really, we can be loving towards everybody, but you need to pick a few people you can actually love and love well. You do that through small groups. And by the way, I just want to say, I'm just really proud of you guys at Smyrna Laverne. I know on Wednesday nights, now that you have a building 24/7, the koinonia groups, the word koinonia, by the way, is a Greek word that simply means to share, to have fellowship with others, that they're really taking off. And I'm just going to tell you, if you want to learn to forgive, you join a small group, and then you pour out your burden there. Let your small group be your family. So I'm going to say this. First, pour out the burden to your small group. So in a lot of ways, the elders form my small group. In addition to this, some of the senior staff leaders are my small group. But then I have a discipleship group as well. And it's me and young guys. And you know what? I'm pretty honest with these guys. This is where we pour out what's on our hearts. That's why you have a small group. If your small group is just a pie tasting group or, you know, cheese tasting group or something else, then you're just missing out on so much it could be. If you're the Super Bowl small group, that's what we do. Once a year we get together and watch the Super Bowl. You're missing out on so much. By the way, if you're not regular with your small group, if you don't really make it that many times, then you're just missing out on something awesome God wants you to have. So start here. Next time you meet with your small group, if I were you, I'd raise my hand and I'd say, okay, there's something I need help with. And then I'd pour it out. Everybody with me? Like, we have a lot of small groups meet on Sunday night. This is Sunday. So a lot of you are going to meet tonight. We got like 80 small groups. Joe Roberts, by the way, is launching 10 new groups in coordination with this service, this series we're doing. Tonight, raise your hand. Whoever's got the program in there, they're all right if you raise your hand. You can just walk all over them. Give them something to forgive you for. Raise your hand and say, okay, there's something I'm wrestling with. I got to pour it out. And then, you know, let the monkeys tumble. Let them have it. And then ask them, wrestle with me in prayer over this until I know what to do. Like, don't just do it one night. Like, you know what, that drive-by healings don't work. Drive-by healings don't work. Drive-by charity's nice, but it's not all that nice. What really matters is getting involved and digging down deep until you get the issue resolved. So say to your small group, will you guys enter a period of prayer with me? It might take 2 months. It might take a year. Will you all pray for me and don't let me drop this until we've done what we've got to do? Ask them to pray with you. Then, when you're ready, ask whoever it is that you need to forgive, are they willing to meet with you? Let me say a few things about this. Sometimes they're deceased. You may have a parent that you need to forgive who's deceased. Now, just last Sunday, someone came up to me and said, I wrote a letter to my mother in which I forgave her. I put it in a very nice place, and I'm going to go there now and look at it regularly and I'm releasing her of all debt. Her mother's deceased. And there are some times you can't meet with people. So I just want to make sure that I qualify this. If there's a dangerous person, if there's a predator, if there's someone that really that you know could well do wrong, don't meet with them. Okay? Everybody hear that? Don't meet with them. But a lot of our issues, they're not really that caliber. They're just simple acts of, I just want to talk to you. Ask to meet with those who hurt you. And then this is very important. Go into the meeting assuming the best. Go in and listen first. How many times have I been wrong about sizing up someone? I'll sit down with them and I'm ready to chew them out. I'm upset with them. I'm angry. Only to, when they tell me their side of the story, I just like, oh my goodness. I'm so glad I kept my big mouth shut. Because all of us are carrying all kinds of pain. A lot of times they had no idea they did it. Or maybe they have some sort of explanation that makes perfect sense. Start by assuming the best. Ask questions and listen first. Then, it's okay to ask for help. Like in marriage, Julie and I have practiced this a lot. It's okay to say, I need you to say you're sorry. I need you to know this hurt. It may be sometimes that you have to say, look, I need you to pay me back. It's okay to ask for justice. It's okay to ask for help. Sometimes we need it. Like again, especially in marriage, sometimes you just need somebody in marriage to acknowledge that I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have said that. It's okay to ask for that. But here's the deal. You can forgive no matter what they do. You can say, I'm not carrying the ball and chain around. I'm not going to carry it around. I release you. I'll let God handle it. By the way, if you'll kind of throw that in, you know, that kind of helps a little bit in your marriage. You know, I'm just going to let God judge this one. And then do this. Walk away in freedom. Let it go. All week long, I had the privilege of being discipled by this guy, Shadonke Johnson. Y'all, I cannot tell you what it means to be discipled by Shadonke Johnson. They've baptized, if you include the movements that he's associated with, probably 1.6 million people. They've planted 70,000 churches. Everywhere you go, it's disciple makers making disciples. It's church planters planting churches. And the man is so humble and so brilliant. It's like he's the most phenomenal leader I've ever been around. I got to spend the whole week with Shadonke this week. Sierra Leone, you've heard me talk about it. We need to get on to what they're doing, by the way. It's on steroids. They're winning the world for Jesus. And I'm asking Shadonke, you know, tell me about what's an ordinary day like for you. And when he tells you an ordinary day, it's like, oh my, he gets more in an ordinary day than I get in a whole year. So he told this story. This was the coolest story I'm into now. They're having so they pray like, as they say there, there's no such thing as a disciple-making movement unless first there's a prayer movement. By the way, North Americans need to know that. We will never have a disciple-making movement until we have a prayer movement first. So that's just the bottom line. Like, we can build all the artificial trees you want and sell them at Hobby Lobby, but if you want a real tree, only God can make that grow. In the same way, if you want a real revival, only God does that. So I'm with Shadonke, and he says, oh, the other day this happens. He got a call from a guy. Let me back it up. He got a call, but before the call was this. He said a couple of years ago, they were having an all-week prayer service, and Shadonke had left the prayer service to run home to get something. I don't remember what he said. He got there, and when he walked in his house, he heard a noise. So they speak Creole. I shouldn't pretend to speak Creole, but it's fun to listen to him do it. But in Creole, he says something to the effect of, Creole, by the way, it's like what they say, that's how they speak in, I think, all of Louisiana, maybe. So he says, who's there? And someone says, me. And he doesn't recognize the voice. He says, now who's there? And someone says, me. Shadonke goes back there. Someone was robbing his house. So Shadonke has a couple of guys with him, and they say to the guy, we're going to call the police unless you come to my prayer service right now. This literally happens. Now, who would have thought of that? Which one of us would have said, I'm going to call the police unless you come to church with me next Sunday? So they take the guy to church. Immediately, they go back up to church. Shadonke says they put guards at every door so the guy couldn't leave. They start praying over the guy. The guy breaks down. He's weeping. He starts apologizing. Then he asks Shadonke to come to dinner that week. The thief does. Shadonke shows up at dinner. He says, when I got there, the wife asked the guy, you know, so how did you meet Shadonke? And he said, the guy said, oh, it's an interesting story. We'll talk about it someday. Shadonke starts a Bible study with the guy, baptizes him, helps him go through school. He gets a degree in business, moves off somewhere, plants a couple of businesses, does this awesome thing, then calls up Shadonke 2 years later, this is what just happened, and said, hey, I just want you to know, I've planted two churches in the name of Jesus. So here's a guy who never even considers how hard it is to forgive, and I want to show you these pictures because this was, we were at a church, one of the churches out in the village, and I asked, now who planted this church, and every one of these guys came forward, including there's a little baby in one of their arms, I guess probably planted the church too. And I just noticed everywhere I went, this was Shadonke, you know, he's preached to us a couple of times here. This is what I saw everywhere I went in Sierra Leone. A joy like I've never seen in my life. You're joyful people, but I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it. And it dawned on me why. Not just because they have Jesus, but because they have let go of all the bondage. When they came to Jesus, they just let go of all the bondage. Shadonke's view is, if I die, I die. But here's my chance to save this thief's soul. Who knows how many people are going to be raised to a new life because instead of calling the police, Shadonke says, you got to go to a prayer meeting with me. Now, you may not need to do that. I'm not recommending that plan. But I'll tell you what I am recommending. I'm recommending you live a life so free of the bondage of unforgiveness that you got a joy like that. That's what I'm recommending. As God forgave us, we forgive one another. If we can help you with the bondage of unforgiveness, we'll have a song at each campus. Come down and talk to whoever's standing down front. We'll pray with you. We'll help you do whatever needs to happen in your life. Don't carry the ball and chain of unforgiveness with you. Let's stand up and let's sing.